Hello, everyone. This is Don Jurgler, and welcome to the Insuring Cannabis Podcast, a bi-monthly trip into the intersection of two industries that couldn't be more different. Cash is king in cannabis. With limited access to banking services, that's because the federal government continues to view cannabis as a controlled substance, dispensaries have large quantities of cash going in and out their doors daily. Cash going in registers, cash on the way to the safe, cash being taken off premises. Sort of like rats who smell cheese, this attracts thieves, with visions of fat, sticky wads of cash lying around waiting to be snatched up. And sitting next to that cash are often massive quantities of a product that's easy to sell on the street. It's all just too tempting. As a result, there's no shortage of prevention at your typical dispensary. Such measures are often required by state or local law, security cameras, high-tech gadgetry, guards, you know, precautions galore. Insurance plays an important role too, specifically a crime policy. It covers things like employee theft, counterfeit notes, robbery, theft, both on and off premises. And experts say it's the best way to cover cash in a business where the greenback rules the land.
Cash is king in the cannabis industry, no doubt about it, but it is their Achilles heel.
That was Chris Bowden, cannabis practice group team leader for San Francisco, California-based wholesaler Krause & Associates. Out of curiosity, I asked Bowden, who's been writing cannabis policies for over a decade, just how much cash is sitting around in your average dispensary at a given moment. Spoiler alert, it's a heck of a lot.
So it's gotten better in part of it where a lot of the back end stuff, now they actually can get bank accounts. But when you go to a dispensary, whether it be adult use or medicinal, it's still very cash heavy up front. So when you're buying your meds, I would still say well over 80% is cash. And then the only other option is debit cards, so you can't use credit cards. So on any given day, depending on the size of the dispensary, they can bring in thousands and thousands of dollars that is coming in. I've seen it up to 20 grand on a given day. And now that cash is sitting there, so where's it going to go? At one point, and this was a couple years ago, it wasn't uncommon to have $200,000, $300,000 in cash at the location, because that is what had to be used for everything. I would say nowadays it's about half of that, maybe $150,000 on any given day that they'll have cash there. And then it can influx, because if they have vendors they're paying out, or they have bills that are coming up and they need to pay cash, it could be up. So it still is very much the Achilles heel in this industry is all the cash that's coming in.
Having so much cash can put a business and its employees in peril. Bowden has no shortage of horror stories to illustrate this.
Pretty scary, to be honest with you, where one of the employees who was in charge of that was bringing in $15,000 or so to the bank. And so they had it, there was a lockbox in the vehicle. They followed every procedure. They did different routes. Anyways, they were driving to the bank to deposit, and the vehicle was carjacked. Luckily the driver didn't get hurt, obviously shooken up. But they got away with about $15,000 in cash. Never could prove inside job or, you know, who did it, because it was so quick. But unfortunately, this was a couple years ago, and there really wasn't the crime coverage available that was there in the market. So it was one of those where it really did solidify to me that, dang, we need to get some coverage, because they are moving cash so frequently. And even though they had the safeguards in place, and, you know, they did everything they were supposed to do, that it happened to them. And luckily, in all honesty, it wasn't one of their normal deposit amounts, which is usually closer to the $25,000, $35,000 limit. But nonetheless, they were out 15 grand right off the bat.
How about one more story for those who may not yet be convinced?
So the carjack was one, but then there was employee theft, where the employee was, again, it was cash. This was a couple years ago, before there was a lot of coverage available. And the employee would ring up, the total sale should have been 140. She would ring up 100, put 100 in the till and keep 40. And they believe that she was doing that consistently on a very ongoing basis for at least 6 months. They figured out, be going through the transactions and the video just as far back as they pretty much needed to go, okay, yeah, she was doing this. They went back for just a few months, and in that period average, they guesstimated that it was at least around $2,500 to $3,000, probably more, because that was the minimum they could figure out. And then a similar situation, again, it's employee theft, is a bookkeeper of a client was basically doing the same thing. She was skimming off the top. That one was a lot higher, and that was $50,000, but they figured out over a 12-month period that she was doing. So that is a real risk for these operations, is employee theft of the cash itself.
One important step before agreeing to insure an operation is to have an underwriter look things over. And there are few, if any, in the insurance business who don't know how thorough they can be. Kieran J. O'Rourke, Vice President and Director of Underwriting for Canisure Insurance Services, a cannabis and hemp MGA and wholesale broker, is a stickler for details. He has good reason to be. He's seen what good theft prevention can do and just how persistent criminals can be.
We had one situation come up. Now, this claim was luckily closed without payment, but we actually had two claims on successive nights. And the first night, we had somebody trying to smash the door down to get in, obviously to steal something, we think. And that night, there was nothing but a very, very beat up door, but no entry. So the door, the prevention method, right at the building envelope level, worked perfectly. The very next night, and we don't know yet whether this was the same person or another person that was thinking that they might take advantage of an already busted up door, but the very next night, at the very same door, at the very same building, we had essentially a repeat performance. This time, however, the perpetrator was armed with the right tools and was able to get into the building. And I have to admit, it was a little bit funny to watch the video that was taken of what happened next. But as soon as this person gained access to the inside of the building, of course, the local alarms were going off. And these are the type that are highly annoying, very loud. And this person ended up doing just a couple laps around the building looking for something to grab and go, and you would see camera A, person runs by, you look at camera B, they're running in the next direction, camera C picks them up around the corner, camera D, and this went on for a couple minutes. All the while, the alarm was blaring loudly, and at this point, the perpetrator found the door that they came in and left. Didn't damage anything, didn't steal anything. The door had been repaired, but obviously with a second attempt, they were able to defeat it. But the good news was that from two different angles, the local alarm, I believe, which was probably causing a lot more stress than the perpetrator had expected, and the fact that nothing was left out. There was nothing left laying around. There was no obvious signs that the cash is this way, really prevented anything from going badly for the insured.
Clever criminals require creative solutions. Ever heard of a man trap?
You have the full array of prevention and detection and what have you, passive, non-passive systems, what have you. Most of the regulations demand a certain amount of cameras inside and out, number one. Number two, motion detection, because we've had a few where some crafty criminals have decided to come in through the roof. And so where a camera may not catch that from the outside, the motion detection is going to catch it from the inside. We also have systems that are set up for during business hours. The theory of the so-called man trap, where you come in a set of doors and you're not inside yet, there's another set of doors. And so those doors are, you know, they serve to just slow things down for the folks that are trying to commit the crime there. So aside from that, we've got regulations both from an underwriting standpoint and from a state standpoint that say the product has to be in a safe or a vault room when you're not open for business, and these safes have to have certain weight limits and bolting to the structure requirements. The vault room has to have some type of certification. Most of the certifications come from DEA specs, the Department of the Drug Enforcement Department, interestingly enough. So the regulations in preventing a crime are more of a deterrent, but if somebody is determined that they are going to break in, then normally these systems have shown that they are spot on as far as their ability to slow the crime down and allow people to get there to mitigate the loss.
Steve Sherman is Vice President of the Cannabis Risk Group for PSA Insurance and Financial Services of Hunt Valley, Maryland. He estimates he has about 100 clients in the cannabis space, dispensaries, processors and growers, and some of the ancillary businesses that serve the industry. Not all of them have been lucky enough to escape theft unharmed.
I should also say that not long ago, unfortunately, I know of a dispensary where the dispensary owner entered the facility by himself in the morning before it opened, and two guys were waiting for him, came out of the bushes, brandished a firearm, actually beat him up a little bit, made him go inside at gunpoint and open up the vault. And that was certainly the most serious thing I had. Thank God he's okay, but a traumatic experience.
So you'd think everyone in the cannabis business who's at risk from theft would be running to their nearest insurance agency with a few of those precious wads of cash in hand to get covered. Highly profitable operations may not blink twice in buying a crime policy, but for some, this coverage can be considered a big purchase.
Crime coverage has gotten more expensive in just a year. So as a ballpark, to get a $250,000 policy, I would expect to pay upwards of $10,000. I say that as a minimum, with a $25,000 deductible. $500,000 in coverage might be a minimum of, say, $15,000. $1 million in crime coverage, probably a minimum of $20,000. Again, all with a $25,000 deductible. So depending on how much cash you have on site, I think which should play into whether or not you buy crime coverage. If you're a dispensary that is lucky enough to be able to do frequent bank pickups, and that you might only have $50,000 or $75,000 of cash on hand at any one time, to pay $10,000 and have a $25,000 deductible might mean they can only get $50,000 back for 10 grand a year. I don't know if that's such a good deal. Obviously, if you have much more cash on hand or have several facilities, it probably does make sense. So that's a factor. Crime coverage also gives you some additional coverages that you can't find elsewhere. For example, if you receive a fraudulent invoice and pay that, there may be coverage under the crime policy for that. So it's not just sort of standard robbery and theft. It also covers things like employee dishonesty and some of these other ancillary types of claims that could come in.
Deductibles are also a bit high. Far too high, in fact. That's a complaint Bowden has heard quite often.
Yeah, deductibles have been kind of the big hurdle, at least that I have dealt with my clients and with my agents, is because most of these operations are new or a year in business, 2 years in business, you know, very new, but no crime coverage, we're having to get high deductibles anywhere from 25,000. I've been able to get one lower, but they had, it took a lot. It took a lot of begging and pleading to make that happen, but the premium adjusted for it. So that's been the hardest part, is how do you find that balance between self-retention, which would be the 25 grand, to the actual coverage that they do need, and finding solutions and workarounds to make that work. So the deductible has been an issue, but it is something that we always bring up with the carriers, and we're starting to come up with solutions and figure out ways to, you know, hopefully get that lower.
Well, there you have it. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Insuring Cannabis Podcast. You can find other episodes from this series by visiting insurancejournal.tv. Until next time, I'm Don Jurgler.